Are you a high performer, obsessed with growth, and looking for an edge? Welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance. Together, we'll discover underground secrets to unlocking the full potential of your mind, body, and spirit. We'll learn from some of the world's leading minds, from ancient wisdom to cutting-edge tools and everything in between. This is your host, Nick Urban. Enjoy the episode. Welcome back to another episode of Mind Body Peak Performance. Today, I've got Eric Levi with me on the show. Eric is a nutritional therapy practitioner that specializes in using nootropics, nutrition, and biohacking to upgrade the power of your brain. I first connected with Eric via a nootropics Facebook group that we are both part of. Rather than following the typical nootropic standards of adding more ingredients, Eric takes a different approach. But first, what exactly are nootropics? To me, they're compounds, ingredients, and supplements that enhance different facets of your brain power, ranging from memory to mental clarity to focus to motivation to processing speed. Some of my highlights from this episode with Eric include the connection between your gut and brain, Eric's favorite brain-enhancing supplements, the problem with isolationism and reductionist thinking, hacks you can use to get away with occasional cheat meals, the little-known dangers of buying supplements through Amazon, how to instantly increase the potency of nootropics, hacking your brainwaves to drop into flow state fast, and Eric's approach to self-quantification. One quick note before we get started. You'll often hear nootropics and smart drugs used synonymously, but in my view, they're very different compounds. Smart drugs like modafinil, Ritalin, and Adderall, used off-label for productivity purposes, might provide a stronger, more noticeable effect, but over the long term, nootropics have benefit, have little to no downside, are often but not always natural, and most importantly, support overall brain health, making them the better choice to get more done faster. With that out of the way, let's get started. Eric, will you walk us through your backstory a little bit and what nootropics are to you and how you got into them?
Sure. Thanks, Nick, for having me on your podcast, by the way. So my background is as a nutritional therapy practitioner. I'm certified through the Nutritional Therapy Association. Essentially, as a nutritional therapy practitioner, what I do is I help people, or I kind of guide people to use nutrition to essentially ease chronic issues they're dealing with. So there's no quick fixes. There's no like, hey, take this, you know, magic supplement or this, you know, amazing biohack. It's really working on foundational issues to address things like gut health, metabolism, really whatever it is, nutrient deficiencies. Really, most of the times it stems from, you know, kind of slight changes people need in their diet or lifestyle habits. But for me personally, the way I got into this field of holistic health was I was not a healthy dude for a long time. I was never really chronically sick. At least I didn't think I was, but I didn't value health. I didn't value good nutrition. I was a comedian in New York City. I was just going day to day, eating dollar pizza, top ramen, staying up all hours of the night, just living a real savage lifestyle. And it was fun, but eventually what happened was my body started to break down. And there was a point where my wife was doing this. She found this holistic nutritionist who was doing like this kind of group. It was called Gut Thrive. And it was this, it was I don't want to say a fast, but it was like a gut biome rebalancing protocol. And this was back, I think must have been like 2014, 2015. This was before anybody was talking about the microbiome, or at least it wasn't as popular as it of a topic as it was now, to the point where when I heard this word microbiome, I had no idea what it meant. It just sounded so scientific and so ridiculous to me. The idea that bacteria in your gut has any leverage on your health. And, you know, any married dudes out there could probably attest to this. You know, when your wife says you're going to do something, you do it, or you're never going to live that down. So I partook in this protocol, and it was intense. It was like a week of like fasting with just bone broth and real basic vegetables, and then using these different herbs. And I couldn't recreate it now because it's been so long, but I just remember it was very intense. And it was very unlike anything I'd ever done before. And I noticed something. I noticed that it worked. What happened was all of a sudden my digestion started working a lot better. And more importantly, my mood felt better. Like, I had always dealt with not chronic depression or serious anxiety, but real low levels of these things, you know? And so I noticed that my mood was better. I noticed I felt better in the day. I was just like genuinely a happier person. I was more optimistic, and I wasn't dealing with as much anxiety. And to be honest with you, my bowel movements were regular. And so from that point forward, I go, okay, there's something to this holistic way of doing health. And from that point forward, I just got really into health research, nutrition research, you know, trying several different diets, you know, doing kind of like a, I don't know what you would call it, like a dirty keto to like, I was a strict vegan for a couple years, all the way to where I'm at now, where it's probably like a mix of like paleo-ish, but it's not like strict. And so being in the nutrition world and being in the stand-up world really gave me some unique insights into the dynamics of people. You know, I was always around people, and my job was to make people laugh. But I noticed that as comedians, we were the most miserable, depressed people there are. And it never made sense to me. And this theme of depression and anxiety just is rampant in the stand-up world. And I started, after doing something like Gut Thrive, I really couldn't understand like why, you know, as a 25-year-old or a 30-year-old person living your dream, you know, performing in New York City, why you could be depressed at all. And after I got my nutritional therapy certificate, I started to put the two and two together. I started to realize that there was something to this nutrition and mood component. And then that's what brought me to nootropics. And I started looking at different nootropics. And, you know, we've talked about like the racetams, but I was looking at things like, you know, the herbs, the amino acids, the mushrooms, all these different popular nootropics that are out there that have these cognitive enhancing properties. And I started to really dive into that. And then that's when I built Holistic Nootropics. And it's really my main focus right now.
What are some of the ones, like you mentioned mushrooms and adaptogens, what are the ones that you like?
Well, I like mushrooms. I love lion's mane. I like cordyceps. I really love aminos. I love, I love L-theanine, taurine, L-carnitine. I really like experimenting with these things because they are proven compounds that are found naturally, obviously, in food, you know, the adaptogens. I'm not crazy about ashwagandha, to be honest with you, but I love Bacopa monnieri. I've actually gotten into making my own tinctures now. And I really believe that's it's the most cost-effective and like quality effective way to take herbs. I take different things for like the liver. So phosphatidylcholine, I take every so often. I like curcumin, but I actually take raw turmeric for curcumin. But I know curcumin has a ton of benefits. I like B vitamins. So, and then especially I love the minerals, you know, that's the 800 pound elephant or whatever in the room that nobody talks about is mineral balancing. So, magnesium, that's the granddaddy of it all, right? Everyone's magnesium deficient, and there's 100 different kinds of magnesium. And, so I love magnesium glycinate. I love threonate. I love citrate, malate, taurate, I believe. And I mean, I could just go to my supplement cabinet and just, it would take me a while because I got a lot of stuff, but you know, it's always changing. I think that's the big thing too. It's like what I'm taking now will be different next week, will be different. And we're recording this on the weekend, and you know, on the weekend, I actually don't take anything at all. I like to give my body a break from taking supplements. So I think that's also when it comes to supplements and nootropics, it's not about what you're taking, but it's about timing, it's about cycling, it's about dosage. There's so much more context to using these compounds correctly.
So back on what you're saying about curcumin versus turmeric, the difference in bioavailability is possibly offset by something like the turmerosaccharides in turmeric, which are different than curcumin and have other benefits. So there's a whole world there that's different than most people see.
Absolutely. I mean, it's like, I think it was Michael Pollan called this, like, what do you call it? Like nutritionism or something like that. You know, where we're so obsessed with these very specific compounds that are found in these foods. And so what we do is we just go for just that compound, just that one molecule or that one atom or that one thing. But what we don't realize is that the way these things were researched originally, well, I shouldn't say that, but the way that they have their most potent effect is that they have the entourage effect, that they work in conjunction with the stuff around them. Perfect example is vitamin C. You know, when you go to a store and you get a supplement of vitamin C, ascorbic acid is just one part of this giant vitamin C compound, which has all these other parts to it. And the reason why it's so effective, the reason those, you know, those sailors or whatever on those ships were squeezing limes, you know, into their mouths and not getting scurvy. Was it scurvy? I think it was scurvy. Yeah. Was because it wasn't the vitamin C, it was the entire, or it wasn't the ascorbic acid, it was the entire vitamin C compound that comes with all the stuff, including ascorbic acid.
And in 10 years, we'll have an even better understanding of some of the other parts that are in the whole plant, the whole food that aren't in the isolated supplement.
Yeah, absolutely.
What other things do you take in terms of trace minerals?
Well, actually, I take this stuff called trace mineral drops. I take them in the morning. I take magnesium, and then really the rest of my minerals. Molybdenum. I take molybdenum separate, molybdenum supplement, because I have a potential sulfur sensitivity. So, you know, this is a big thing, especially for people who try to eat healthy. You don't realize how much sulfur you're actually taking in. So like all of your favorite leafy green vegetables are high in sulfur. If you eat a lot of eggs, if you eat a lot of, you know, meat, even if it's like whatever, like grass-fed, grass-finished, high quality meat, it's gonna have a lot of sulfur in it. And there is potentially a very specific gene called the CBS gene mutation. And granted, this is not like, this is, just because I'm saying this doesn't mean this is like 100% true, because it really, like the research is still kind of vague on it, but there's a lot of theories as to this gene being very influential. But regardless, when you take in a lot of sulfur, it requires molybdenum to turn from this toxic sulfite into bioavailable sulfate that is what does all the detoxifying in the cells that you need and gives you all the benefits. Well, if you're eating a lot of sulfur, it's helpful to take molybdenum. And if you think you might have a sulfur sensitivity, if you react to sulfur foods, molybdenum's helpful. But regardless, the other minerals like potassium, sodium, I just use a lot of salt throughout the day. I put salt in my water. I salt my food pretty heavily. I shouldn't say heavily, but I salt it for good taste. I don't hold back. Let's just say that. Potassium, I eat a ton of vegetables, so I get a ton of potassium. And then chromium, I'll sometimes use separately, like if I'm having a real carbohydrate dense meal, because chromium is really good for insulin sensitivity and aids the pancreas. So
do you like chromium more so than metformin or berberine or any of the other glucose disposal agents?
So I'm fairly new into the glucose disposal agent game. I've never tried berberine. It's actually on my list of things to try. In fact, I just spoke with somebody and we were talking about dihydroberberine, which I guess is the more bioavailable form of berberine. And I know berberine is big in the anti-aging and biohacking community. Any chance you get to use a natural compound over pharmaceutical, I am all for that. You know, I think someone was telling me, and I might have even read this in I think there's a study out there somewhere that says that people who walked within like right after a meal, took like a 20-minute brisk walk, actually outperformed metformin as far as glucose disposal or glucose absorption, which is interesting. So I'm sure metformin has its, I have family members on metformin. So, I get why people do it. I just think there's more natural ways to do it. And sure, you know, there's a lot of research behind berberine, behind dihydroberberine, behind things like bitter melon, cinnamon. I think there's another, banabana.
There's all kinds.
There's all kinds, yeah.
If you can go out and take a 10-15 minute walk after dinner and get the same results, do that first. And if you need a little extra assistance, then you can turn to the other options.
Well, this is what it comes back to. We were talking about this before, which is like, if you don't have these basic lifestyle hacks in place, you can't supplement your way out of a bad lifestyle, you know? And not to say it's like people are obese because they don't walk right after meal. People are obese because they don't walk, period, you know, because they're any chance, any excuse you have to move, you should do that. And that's how you, I mean, there's thousands of health benefits, you know, beyond just, I mean, the glucose disposal is like at the top, but I mean, just movement in general is good for every bit of physical and mental well-being. And if you opt to say, well, I'm going to just take metformin so I can avoid, you know, taking 2 or 3 walks during the day. I mean, I don't know what you're trying to accomplish with that, but it's just not going to get you very far.
Totally agree. You and I both take a lot of different things. And I saw on your website that you have a guide to buying supplements on Amazon smartly. Can you explain that a little bit?
Sure. So the supplement guide, it's not just to buying supplements on Amazon. It's really to buying supplements, period. But I know a lot of people buy supplements on Amazon. And really the number one thing you should know about buying supplements on Amazon is it's not a smart way to buy supplements. Reason being is because Amazon is notorious for having these third-party sellers that are able to essentially hack into main listings and sell you counterfeit products. They can use counterfeit images and marketing material and sell counterfeit products. Actually, a couple of years ago, there was a huge lawsuit between Amazon and I think it was Procter & Gamble. I forget the company that this was with, but basically they were selling fake probiotics, you know, under a probiotic listing. And this, you know, this was one example of a thing that can happen very frequently. You know, there's a supplement company that I use as a practitioner that's very high quality. They're used by functional medicine doctors. They're very well respected. They have a listing on Amazon, but it's not their listing. Somebody opened up a listing under their name, used the same marketing materials. And they, you know, I speak with reps from the company and they tell me over and over again, no, we don't sell on Amazon. So, you know, somebody might go on there and type in this company's name and go, oh, look, I can buy this on Amazon instead of buying it from the distributor, but you're not getting the product. So this is the number one thing people have to understand when they buy supplements on Amazon, which is, you know, there's a good chance you might not get the thing you want. And to be honest with you, it's just a bad business practice. Like as far as a consumer, like I think as consumers, we have to demand more and we have to speak with our dollars. And if there's a company that you like, buy it from them directly, support them directly, you know, give them the money, cut out that middleman of Amazon. And let's be honest, Amazon doesn't need more money. Okay, that's my Amazon rant. Now, as far as buying supplements, again, this could be, you know, Amazon, GNC, Costco, wherever you are buying supplement. So really what it is, it's a guide that goes over different ingredients to look for when you buy supplements. So, you know, one of the biggest reasons I got into the nootropic space and I started my site was because I saw people who were using a ton of supplements and they were saying that the supplements didn't work. And when you look at a lot of supplements out there, there's a certain way that they're made, and you can either get high quality or low quality. And you, when you know the game, you start to see how many people are using low quality supplement business practices. Okay. So a lot of supplement companies, when they have, you know, like a big supplement company, they don't have time to, like, they're not sitting in a garage hand encapsulating every capsule and measuring out by hand the amount of, you know, like L-glutamine or, you know, phenylparacetam or whatever the stuff is that you're getting, right? It's just, it's all to scale, right? So it's machines that are churning stuff out, and they have to have these big quotas every day. So they cut corners, right? They fill products with stuff like, you know, like these different ingredients and fillers. They have to make the product look a certain color. They have to keep it on the shelf longer. You see this a lot in the fish oil business where, you know, fish oil is not extracted correctly, and they use, there's like differences between, you know, pure fish oil and fish oil that's been adulterated. They don't actually remove the triglyceride backbone correctly. And so they use these cheap fillers to kind of fill it all in. So not to mention with fish oil, when you actually think about it, you know, fish oil comes from a fish. A fish is caught from the ocean. And then the second it's pulled out of the ocean, it's dying, right? And then it sits on a boat for a while. And then it gets shipped to a processing facility. And the fish is not only dead, but it's like rotting, right? It's decomposing and it's oxidizing. And then they turn that into your fish oil. And now fish oil is a very, you know, for lack of a better term, flimsy oil that's very vulnerable to heat and light. And, you know, your fish oil is encapsulated. It goes into a box, goes into a bottle. That bottle is probably sitting on a truck somewhere in the heat, especially if you're in somewhere like in Arizona or, you know, New Mexico or California, where it's hot, Florida, sitting in a truck, in a hot truck. And it's oxidizing even more. Or if it's like out in the light, whatever it is, all these, basically my point is it's very vulnerable to oxidation. So, you know, you might think like, hey, I'm getting this fish oil and it's all well and dandy, but you're really just consuming, you know, an oxidized byproduct of what should have been pure fish oil, but now it's nothing, right? So my guide is a lot of stuff like that. It's basically all the ingredients that you want to look out for when buying supplements. You know, it's very important that when people buy supplements, they look down at that other ingredients tab, you know, and avoid things like vegetable oils, safflower oils, you know, canola oil, right? They put this stuff in supplements. You know, all the food colorings, right? All the different fillers, the dextroses, the maltodextrins, the sodium starch glycolates, magnesium silicate, or God forbid, talc, right? These anti-caking agents they use in supplements so that, or powders and stuff, so that the stuff doesn't like cake together. Well, that stuff is also very toxic and have been linked to different cancers, and different artificial sweeteners like aspartame or neotame or saccharin or these sorts of things, right? And then it's also important to know that a lot of these supplements like citrate is distilled from corn. And a lot of people have sensitivities to corn. If you got sensitivity to soy, you want to look out for stuff that has, you know, different soy isoflavones and all these different things, right? If you have a gluten allergy, you don't want to take something that comes from wheat. So my guide basically gives you just a straight up list of things to look out for. And really, when you use this supplement guide, when you're buying supplements, you will eliminate 98% of the stuff that's being sold out there. That's how bad, you know, the supplement market is.
It's unfortunately true too, because I've purchased my fair share of supplements off of Amazon. And I remember one time I got a magnesium and got the bottle, looked at it, looked at the listing that was on Amazon, and noticed that in my bottle there was talc under the additional ingredients, and on the listing it wasn't there. And then I looked down through the comments and realized that at some point they changed the product and started shipping out something different from in the description. And also on Amazon, the price will fluctuate wildly. Like one day this product will be $15, the next it'll be $22.
Yeah, we've all been there. You know, Amazon's super convenient. I get it. Like, you know, they already have your credit card, you know, you don't got to go to the other place and put a whole new credit card in, you know, if you got Prime, there's no shipping. I get the convenience of it, but you know, we have to be smarter as consumers. We have to demand more from these supplement companies, you know, and from retailers. And so, you know, vote with your dollars and buy the high quality stuff. Also, don't use vitamin D that's not really vitamin D or that's more preservative than vitamin D. And then, you know, continue on with this, like this mirage in your head that, oh, I'm getting vitamin D when you're not getting vitamin D, right? Same thing with magnesium, same thing with all the supplements. You know, if you want to do it right, do it right.
Yeah. And what's the holistic nootropics approach? I know that you've touched on getting the body's systems back into balance before proceeding, but like when you work with a client, what is it that you guys do to identify deficiencies or areas of improvement?
The holistic nootropics approach is really, it's really about setting somebody up so that they can properly use nootropics or become like the biohacker they want to be. So, you know, you can't really optimize yourself until you solve your foundational issues. You know, if you have blood sugar dysregulation, you know, if you wake up and, you know, you have no cortisol and then you go to sleep and your cortisol is shooting through the roof, you have, you know, a form of adrenal fatigue, you have blood sugar dysregulation. If you need 6 coffees to get going or 3 coffees to get going in the morning, if you're drinking Red Bull, if you're drinking Diet Coke, you know, all the nootropics in the world are not going to do anything for you, right? If you have leaky gut, then you have leaky brain. If you have IBS or Crohn's or just chronic heartburn or any of these things, all the supplements in the world are going to do nothing until you figure this out. So what I try to do is I try to help somebody get these foundational processes in your body locked down. And then that way now you can use all the stuff that's going to take you to that fully optimized level. So I focus on people on their gut health, their metabolism, and then their body's ability to detoxify. And that's really what the website's about. That's what the blog's about. And then of course I have, you know, really all of the best nootropic guides. So if somebody just says, hey, I just want something that's going to help my ADHD, or I just want something that's going to help with depression, you know, I've got those lists, right? I've got things all about the different kinds of magnesium and even all the way down to like why yoga could be considered a good nootropic, things for testosterone, right? The benefits of red light therapy. But at its core, holistic nootropics is all about these holistic foundational processes that you really need to get down before you start trying to be the biohacker you want to be. Now, if I work with you, if you're a client of mine, you know, what we do is we have a pretty extensive analytical pre-interview phase where I really get to know you before I even talk to you. So I have people do a pretty extensive just kind of survey evaluation where, you know, they give me just like a multiple choice survey where people answer a bunch of questions. I have this algorithmic software that kind of processes it into allowing me to see what somebody's most pressing issues are in their body. So, you know, where does this person have the most needs? You know, I can see if it's your gut health, if it's your upper GI, your lower GI, your liver health, your gallbladder, your thyroid, your blood sugar, all these different things. And then, you know, on top of that, I do things like hair mineral testing. So you send your a little cut of your hair into a lab, they analyze it, and I can see, you know, what your mineral balance is, what are you high in, what are you low in, what heavy metals are you high in. And then if you choose to go to the next level, we do different organic acids testing, which is, these different markers of your metabolism. So I can see how you're metabolizing different fats, what kind of gut bacteria you're dealing with, how your neurotransmitters are being metabolized, if that's all working correctly. From there, I can also see different things like if you're high in glyphosate, which we all know is a pesticide found in all these fruits and vegetables, right? Which if you're trying to be healthy, but you're not buying like not just organic, but like from a farmer that you know, you probably have a good exposure to glyphosate, and then environmental toxins and mold. So like I was telling you before, it's really all about analytics and data for me.
And do your clients use any self-quantification devices? Do you guys track HRV or sleep or activity?
I encourage people to get the Oura Ring or a Whoop or something. You know, I'm most familiar with the Oura Ring because I wear an Oura Ring myself, so I know that data. And really, I think it's probably like the best baseline marker you're going to find. I don't know how much a Whoop costs. I don't know if it's more expensive than an Oura Ring. I know it has a lot of great data on it as well. I'm not for or against more either one, but I do encourage somebody to have something that can measure heart rate variability, especially, but then also sleep, you know, because if anybody's listening to this who wears an Oura Ring, you know how connected, how much of a story your sleep quality tells to your overall health and wellness. So, yeah, I certainly encourage people to use stuff like that.
Yeah. The Whoop does have a monthly fee. That's what makes it a little more expensive over the long term. I have an Oura as well. I'm about to start testing out a new device, relatively new device called the BioStrap. And it's like a, are you familiar with it?
Yep. Yep. Uh-huh. That's great.
On the subject of cognitive enhancing technologies, what do you like there?
Cognitive enhancing technologies. I love the, I use this thing called the Apollo neuro wearable. So it's a strap and you can strap it on your wrist or your ankle. I wear it around my ankle. House arrest device. But it's a low vibrational, low frequency vibration technology. It's just little pulses, like just little vibrational pulses for like half hour, an hour. There's several different settings and it actually works. Like I've actually measured the differences on my Oura Ring and when I use it throughout the day, the next day I can see my HRV is much improved than it was when I didn't use it the day before. Almost to the point where I've been able to train myself to not wear it and my HRV is still high. So I love the Apollo Neuro. I just started using this thing called the Omni PEMF NeoRhythm, and it's like a head device that is like PEMF therapy, transcranial magnetic stimulation. What's the science on it? I have a page on my blog all about it, but off the top of my head, it basically hacks your brain waves. And so, the idea is use these magnets to essentially train your brain waves to operate at a certain frequency so that you can enhance calm, meditation, sleep. It's good for pain relief. So I just started using that. So I don't really have the data to know like if it's working or not, but it's a pretty wild device for sure.
I have one of those same type devices. It's a TACS instead of TDCS. So it's an alternating current and I used to use it, but it's not very user friendly. You put a patch here and a patch here and I didn't feel insane results from it. So I discontinued, but it's back on my radar to keep trying it again.
Yeah. I kind of feel almost the same way about this, except it's a little more user friendly in the sense that it's not like those patches like that. It's just like a headband you put on. But like user wise, I think they still have some work to do to make it like, I think the concept is there. It's just the execution of it. I don't know if it's there yet. There's an app that goes with it. The app is a little glitchy, but it's still fairly new. So it's like, as it catches on more, as they make improvements to it, it's very promising. That's for sure.
Yeah. And Halo Sport, another company, they make something that's user-friendly. It looks kind of like these headphones. You just pop it over and musicians and athletes use it.
Okay. Yeah. What is it? Is it neurofeedback or?
Yeah. Well, it's TDCS. It's the same
TDCS.
Thing.
Okay.
Same thing, but
sure.
Mixed reviews because of the conductivity of the little pads and your hair has to be like wet to a certain amount.
So. Got you. Yeah. It's a very interesting approach. I think it's only in its infancy now because we just now have the technology to make it so user-friendly by having the ability to use headphones and Bluetooth and phone apps. And I think even if things are like in their second generation, I still think we're very much in the first generation of these things. And probably a few years down the line, we'll start seeing these really become optimized and very effective for sure.
Yeah, it wasn't too long ago that these devices were all still in the lab and you had to go visit a clinician and they would have to study it and know exactly how to administer it. And that's both a blessing and a curse that now it's widely available, but the knowledge isn't completely there. So someone who has 10 years studying this can administer it very effectively. But now if you or I go out and buy one and we don't take enough time to research it, the consequences can be on us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've had these same exact thoughts while using the NeoRhythm, because I'm like, man, like I kind of feel like I'm in a good place. Like I really hope this thing doesn't like buzz my waves too far backwards and turn me into a psychopath or something, you know? I don't think that would happen, but again, you know, you never know with this stuff, right? It could go either way.
And another thought that I have pretty often with my supplement stack is that I'm taking like my unique stack is something that no other human has probably ever consumed.
So what are you taking?
In the mornings, I tend to take trace minerals, like you were saying, in my morning water with magnesium. And then later in the day, I take a cocktail of adaptogens in water. Nothing too crazy, but then I'll also add in some nootropics occasionally. And by the end of the day, it's like I'm probably taking 10, 15 things. But even then, it's just like historically, people living in different parts of the world wouldn't have access to all these adaptogens at the same time, plus these other like modern nootropics.
Yeah. Well, here's the question. How is your sleep? Like how does your HRV and heart rate and deep sleep numbers come out?
At the end of the day, when I take it, it come out well.
Okay. And that's how you know.
Yeah. I do little tweaks here and there. And Do you think that HRV and sleep are the bottom line? If a supplement stack increases it, then that's what matters most?
In my opinion, yeah. Like at the end of the day, like when you read that HRV number, it's so important because it's more than just the number, but it's really telling the story of your nervous system's effect on your entire body. And that's the key between good health and bad health. Like everything interplays with your autonomic nervous system. So, you know, it's not just that you want to only be in parasympathetic all the time. You know, you want a good interplay. You know, you need a good stress response. The problem is that so many people live in their stress response so much that they've burnt it out and have completely made it so it doesn't know when to react. So that's where adrenal fatigue comes in, you know, because you're constantly stressed out so much. What you've done is you've let your cortisol run like a wild lion or a wild tiger, like everybody. You have no way to control it. And you need cortisol to wake up in the morning. You need a stress response to like react to things. You need cortisol to be able to go from sitting to standing up, from lying down to standing up without getting dizzy. You know, I've worked with people who like cannot stand straight up from lying down. Like they have to ease themselves up because if they go too fast from lying down to standing up, they'll faint. You know, and that just comes from chronic overuse of the sympathetic nervous system. So when your body is responding like that, especially at night when it needs to be asleep and it's in parasympathetic and your HRV is very high, I mean that means your diet's on point. That means you're making the right gut bacteria. That means your metabolism is functioning well. You don't have glucose sitting out in your blood, you know, panicking your cortisol to shoot out and get it to your cells, right? So the HRV tells a very, very interesting story, and so does your heart rate.
Mm-hmm. One thing I noticed with my HRV is that it fluctuates based on the previous day, and if I have a brutal workout, for example, it's going to be significantly lower the next morning when I check it. And is that a bad thing? Maybe I overdid it. Maybe it's also like a hormetic response, a beneficial hormetic response.
Yeah, it's not about day to day. It's about trends. So it's like if every day your HRV is well below your average, then you want to look at that and go, oh, okay, there's something going on. But if you know that it's like, I'm going to do an intense workout, which is a good thing, and then the next day my HRV is going to be low, but then the day after that, my HRV is going to be high again, then, I mean, yeah, you're right. It's a hormetic response. You need, like, as humans, we need to challenge ourselves. We need to kind of beat ourselves up from time to time. More so probably more regularly than we think. But at the same time, you also need that time to recover. That's my day to day. Like yesterday I was like an 83 readiness on the aura, which for me is good. I had a nice HRV balance, the whole thing. And then I just did a brutal workout, and then, you know, my activity was super high. And then last night had a dinner that was, you know, quality wise, it was okay, but it wasn't the best. And this morning my HRV was well below average, and I feel it today for sure.
Yeah. I've done the same thing myself a number of times, and that awareness is key. We're getting low on time here, but I have a couple other questions for you. What compounds, ideas, practices, and related are you most interested in researching these days?
That's an interesting question. I'm really into hormones and blood sugar metabolism and HRV. That's like probably like my main, the things that I'm most interested in. You know, I'm very ADHD with like some of these health topics. You know, it for me, it like bounces from week to week. Like some weeks I'm really into gut health, some weeks I'm really into detox, but over the long term, I feel like it always to me comes back to blood sugar, hormones, and HRV.
It's quite the combo. And what specifically about hormones?
Not modifying it, but really optimizing it, really like trying to understand like the underlying things that make someone's endocrine system not work right. You know, male hormones, female hormones, like why is testosterone, why is it so hard for some guys to have like optimized testosterone? And we're not talking about like guys who you look at them and they're eating potato chips and playing video games and not moving and they're fat. You know, we're talking about guys who are athletes who have, you know, testosterone that's in the gutter. And how much of an effect that, especially for a man, like that plays on your psychology, right? Because the misunderstanding of testosterone is that it's like a toxic masculine thing. You know, it turns you into an asshole. If anything, testosterone has the exact opposite effect. It's actually a very calming hormone. It actually makes you a very reasonable, very rational person. It helps your sleep. It helps your, you know, your metabolism. It helps like every part about being a man, right? And so we need it. And you look at our lifestyle today, and average testosterone around the world, it's in the gutter. Why? Well, because there's so many, you know, things, whether it's diet, environmental chemicals, those are probably the two biggest ones, but gut health, blood sugar dysregulation. And then for women, it's like women's hormones are even more fascinating. You know, they're so complex, and it's a delicate balance. You know, it has everything to do with like their menstrual cycle, right? And then, you know, you have the balance of estrogen and then progesterone, and then, you know, women need testosterone as well. And then women's thyroids are very sensitive. So a lot of women deal with things like Hashimoto's and hypothyroidism. So, and then you see it in women, like, you know, you have women that like feel are very stable, and then you have women that fly off the handle like very easily, right? And so, and then you can see this happen like within their cycle, within these different interplays of their hormones. So they just control so much, muscle metabolism, fat metabolism. And they're so hard to like to quantify, you know, and even when you measure them, you might not even be getting the right thing. So
the full picture.
Yeah. So it's hormones. It's like you said, the endocrine system is so delicate and there's so many parts to it, but each part relies, you know, like if your pancreas is distressed, I mean, it's going to affect your thyroid. It's going to affect, you know, these other parts of your endocrine system. Right. So like So yeah, so it's just fascinating to me. And also, I should say before you asked a very interesting question, the gallbladder. The gallbladder is very interesting to me. It's been for a long time and nobody ever talks about it. And it's crazy that gallbladder removal surgery is like the third or fourth most common outpatient surgery in the United States. And people just have this thing that you can just get your gallbladder out and everything's going to be fine. Doctors encourage you to get your gallbladder out. And it's such an important organ. It's such an important organ. And like, you know, I love bile. I love like optimizing the gallbladder. Again, and there's hormones within the gallbladder, right? There's a peptide called cholecystokinin that is like so important. And there's cholecystokinin receptors in your brain. And so if you can optimize your cholecystokinin receptors in your gallbladder or in your upper GI, you can optimize these cholecystokinin receptors in your brain, which have an interplay with acetylcholine. And man, it again, it's just the interplay of everything. This is why the holistic approach is so important.
Yeah, and I believe that CCK is also responsible in part for satiety. So if you get your gallbladder removed, then you'll eat more, which doesn't sound very appealing. I was talking to a lady earlier this week whose doctor told her that she absolutely did not need one. And then she got it removed and is now still struggling with the aftermath.
Yeah, I've heard stories of people get their gallbladder out and then bile just like leaks in like internally, you know? It's just crazy to me how doctors do that. You know, like I don't understand like what part of the importance of the gallbladder you miss to where you think that it's just a thing that like, can you live without it? Yeah, of course. You can also live without a kidney. You know, you could live without part of your lung, right? It doesn't mean you should. And the gallbladder too, it's such an easy, I don't want to say easy, but it's a very doable thing to fix. It takes some work, and for some people it takes more work than others, but you can also see the connectedness of the modern diet and how it affects the gallbladder. And for some people, man, it's just about taking out just these toxic foods out of your diet and adding in, God forbid, some saturated fat and allowing the gallbladder to work the way it's supposed to.
Yeah. Eric, one more question before the final. Where can those that are interested connect with you and follow your work?
The best place would be holisticnootropics.com. That's where, you know, I'm doing all my writing, all my content. We have a YouTube channel, just YouTube search Holistic Nootropics. Going to probably have an Instagram page soon, but just holisticnootropics.com and Holistic Nootropics YouTube page, and then the Holistic Nootropics podcast.
Sounds like you're everywhere.
I'm in some of those places. Yeah, I should be more places, but.
So imagine that there's a worldwide burning of the books. All information is lost. You get to save three things, three works of art, either books, videos, interviews, podcasts, whatever you've felt that has most positively impacted your life. What would you choose?
That's a great question. I'll give you some books that I really love. That's, I think, what you're asking. So I love, I used to read a lot of like health books and then I just kind of got burnt out on them, you know, because eventually they all start kind of sounding the same. So I love books that tell health stories. So a great book I read not too long ago, it was called The Battling Brothers of Battle Creek. And it was about the Kellogg brothers. And so Dr. John Harvey Kellogg, who invented Kellogg's brand, him and his brother, I forget his brother's name. I feel like it was like Anthony Kellogg or something like that. And it's such a fascinating story about the beginnings of Kellogg's. And this guy, the reason it's so interesting from a health perspective was at the time, Kellogg was the most respected surgeon in the world in like the late 1800s, early 1900s. And he built this massive, he called it a sanitarium, but it was like a massive clinic in Michigan. And all of the top, you know, philosophers and thinkers and artists and poets at the time would like go see him. And he was doing enemas on everybody. That was his thing. He just loved enemas. So everyone who went to him, you went to this clinic and it was like a retreat and you just had just tubes up your butt. And he would do like four enemas, and it's such an interesting book. So that's a good one. I loved the show The Nick It was on Showtime. I only saw the first season of it, but man, it tells the story of like this real early hospital in old New York, again, in like the early 1900s. And it was all about this doctor who was strung out on opium, and just, he would do these surgeries before we even knew how to do surgery. And you would just watch, like, you would just kill people on the table. And again, just another fascinating story about just early the early history of medicine. And the reason I love these stories is because in medicine and in health, we have to stop sounding so sure of ourselves with everything. I think that's the biggest problem. You know, like we're talking about doctors who just say, hey, just get your gallbladder out, you don't need it, right? What a savage thing to tell somebody, you know? And it's like back in the day, they used to tell people like, yeah, we'll cut off your leg because it's going to get rid of this, you know, this, this disease you have, right? You have chronic dizziness. Oh, we'll just cut off your leg. Well, it's called bloodletting. We'll just let a bunch of blood run out of you, right? Oh, it 100% works. People have been doing it forever. Why wouldn't it work, right? And, you know, same thing with medications. It's like doctors put people on these medications that have all these side effects. And they go, are you sure this is the best thing for my depression? Even though it says on the label that it could cause depression. Or yeah, of course you. It's good for you. Or it could kill you or make you kill yourself. Of course it's a great thing, right? So I like these stories have such important messages that like we have to stop sounding so sure. And everyone from like people like you and I all the way up to like Harvard educated, triple PhD, you know, Nobel Prize winning doctors. Like you always have to keep your mind open and just know that the science is never set. It's never done. That's the whole point of science, is to constantly learn. And as far as like health books go, I really love The Magnesium Miracle by Carolyn Dean. That's where I really got my, you know, really up on magnesium. The Mood Cure by Julia Ross is really good. And then, you know, I love Michael Pollan's work. So I don't know if that answered your question, but I think I gave a little insight into if books were burning, if somebody was on the corner burning books and everybody was just watching them burn books and nobody would say anything, I'd probably go run to the library and get those few things.
That's quite the assortment of books. And Magnesium Miracle was one of the ones that got me interested in minerals in the first place as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's so many great ones out there. Like there's just like, take your pick, you know? Even like the wacko, like diet books, like I've read all the vegan books. I've read, you know, some of the keto books. Like, I think that stuff's great too. You just, if nothing else, you just learn like more of the studies and it really broadens your mind and it allows you to stay open to things.
Totally with you. Well, Eric, it's been fun chatting and getting to know you and Holistic Nootropics.
Nick, I really appreciate it, man. Thank you so much. You're doing great work over here.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode. Head over to Apple Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and leave a rating. Every review helps me bring you thought-provoking guests. As always, you can find the show notes for this one at mindbodypeak.com/ and then the number of the episode. There, you can also chat with other peak performers or connect with me directly. The information depicted in this podcast is for information purposes only. Please consult your primary healthcare professional before making any lifestyle changes.